You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Vargas? We don't need no Vargas. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
I've always depended on the kindness. Strange.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Would you be shocked if I put on something more comfortable?
You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. If you're listening to us on the go, you can catch us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much anywhere else you can get your podcasts. As always, I'm one of your hosts. I am Sean, and I'm here in the studio with the other host, and that is Paul. Paul, how are you today?
I'm doing all right, Sean. Thank you for asking.
I'm always happy to hear that you're doing well.
You're such an angel.
I know. Oh, see, I like what you did there.
Yep.
Well, Paul, you know what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I just made a pun.
I know, but that's why I'm asking you.
I alluded to it. That
alluded to other things. There could be other things we could talk about.
Alluded photo is something different. Anyway.
And it's gone off the rails already.
Yes, right. I know what we're talking about.
Yes, that's good. Awesome. All right. So we are talking about the 1994 family sports fantasy comedy. That was a lot, but...
Yeah, that's a very long
one. That's what it says on Wikipedia.
Stop telling everybody we read from Wikipedia. Well, they'll stop listening to us and just go read Wikipedia.
You said the same thing the last episode.
You asked me if I was reading for Wikipedia, and I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure.
Shut up, Sean.
So what movie are we talking about?
Well done. We didn't even rehearse that one.
We are talking about the 1994 family film. You like that better?
That's way better, actually.
Angels in the Outfield from Walt Disney Pictures, and I am looking forward to this one.
It could happen.
Because, you know, we're kind of in a, you know, we're in the summer groove right now. We did The Sandlot a couple weeks ago.
And we did Independence Day.
I wasn't going to mention that.
And Thor.
But we did Rookie of the Year a couple, like, at the beginning of the baseball season, because I remember you were big on that. We're around opening day. So, you know, it's summer. Baseball is the primary sport happening in the summer. So we thought, let's think of some baseball movies to talk about. So this one's always been on the top of you and mine list. And it's like a forgotten one. It's not in the same... I guess you could say, definitely not in the same stratosphere as Sandlot, I feel, in terms of...
Or even Rookie of the Year.
I was actually about to ask you, what is your, you know, between this and Rookie of the Year, which is...
Rookie of the Year.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I think Rookie of the Year is much more enjoyable in terms of a comedy.
Better script. I would argue that it's a better script.
Okay, that's fair.
I think more people know this movie, Angels in the Outfield, because they look at it and go, oh my God, who was in that movie?
Well, so the way you say that is because Angels in the Outfield, I haven't been able to research and find an exact reason for this, but A, it's not on Disney Plus, and B, it's not even on Blu-ray. Like, they've never had a Blu-ray release of this movie, which is surprising, because I mean, even you can get a cheap Blu-ray of almost any movie. So I don't know if there's some rights issue with this movie and Disney, like... I have no idea. I would like to research that and figure it out because this is a movie I would love for it to show up on Disney Plus because I'd like to watch it. I have not watched this movie all the way through in a long time. You know, probably since I had it on video, which is 15 plus years ago. So, but we're not going to do any news today, but Paul had an idea before we started filming and we're going to kind of go into a little talk about at this time in the Disney company about franchising in terms of making a movie and then what they would want to do for like sequels if the movie was successful and stuff like that. So we're gonna take a quick break, and when we get back we're gonna delve into that for a few minutes, and then we're gonna
We were just gonna talk about that then take the quick break.
Okay, we can do that.
Yeah, I figured that'd be a fun way to go into the quick break.
Oh, okay,
but so whatever you want, you're hosting. No,
well, kind of jumped over me now, so I guess we'll get right into that.
I can always just edit this part out.
You could. So how about we don't take a quick break and we do that? I don't know. You lost me here. So what do you want to do?
Whatever you want. You're the boss. I'm just here along for the ride. But we could take a quick break. You want to take a quick break?
Let's take a quick break.
All right. Hey guys, today's episode is brought to you by Raise Energy Drinks. Raise is a proud member of Rep Sports, and if you guys are looking for a little extra kick during your day, whether you need to tackle a workout or you need to get over that afternoon slump, you can always check out Raise Energy. And if you get to checkout and you enter the code Cinematic, not only will you be getting a 15% discount, but you'll also be supporting the network. So that's Raise Energy with Rep Sports. Code is Cinematic, C-I-N-E-M-A-T-I-C.
Have I ever said how much I hate you?
And welcome back from the break.
Yes, everybody, welcome back. So, Paul, you had this idea, so why don't you take us through your thoughts on the Disney era of the franchising that we want to talk about.
So, Disney, when Disney first started, there would be years between their films, right? Especially the sequels were unheard of to begin with. And it wasn't until the mid-90s or the beginning of the 90s to the 2000s that suddenly they had this, with the creation of VHS.
Well, VHS is the big factor. Yes.
And just the ability to make movies faster. Like, hand-drawn animation was still there, but it was a much faster process than it currently is. And now hand-drawn animation is kind of out the window and CGI is the much more popular version. Really quick, what's your preference, hand-drawn or CGI?
See, that's tough because... To me, you can't say you like one, which means you don't like the other. Mm-hmm. To me, I think the process of hand-drawn animation is still, in my opinion, the premier way of doing animation. It's just it's not done anymore because it's just so much cheaper now to do the computer graphics imagery and stuff like that. So it's a shame because I'm trying to think of the last hand-drawn animated movie was probably Princess and the Frog.
And nowadays, when they do a hand-drawn movie, they make a big deal out of it. It's like...
Well, that's the thing, yeah. So, like, it was a big deal when Princess and the Frog came out because it was like, oh my god, we're going back to the hand-drawn animation, and the hope was, oh, we're going to start doing this again. But Princess and the Frog wasn't as big of a success as they were hoping it would be. Mm-hmm. I think it's gained a little bit of a cult following in the last decade, but when it first was released, it just wasn't big. But I agree with what you're saying in the terms of, obviously, with the invention of the VHS, Disney realized... Okay, we have another form of entertainment that we can distribute to
cash grab.
Cash grab, basically. You're right. They were releasing all the animated films on video for the first time ever. They were making loads of money from that. I mean, unbelievable amounts of money. And I believe the first direct-to-video sequel they did...
Return of Jafar?
It might be. It might actually be Aladdin, the Return of Jafar. I mean... Because it was Return of Jafar and then Aladdin and the King of Thieves.
Solid movie, which is even better.
I like Aladdin and the King of Thieves better than...
They're both very good.
I like Aladdin and the King of Thieves before I like Return of Jafar. But you're right. They're quality. They're not garbage. They're actually pretty good. Would they be good enough if they to release in theaters? No. You definitely can sense the, you know, okay, this movie didn't deserve to go to a theater. It's, you know, subpar, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, in terms of the animation, in terms of the storyline. But... Yeah, it was those, then every movie was getting a sequel. Bambi got a sequel. Cinderella got a sequel.
They also were very famous for doing sequels that are prequels or in-betweenquels.
Timon and Pumbaa, didn't Timon and Pumbaa get one?
In all honesty, though, it was really funny.
I never saw it.
It was like The Lion King 1.5.
Yeah.
And basically, it's like Timon and Pumbaa's story during everything that's happening in The Lion King.
Okay, I do remember that, but I didn't see it, but I remember
it's
that
actually
fun.
Very funny. Okay. Like, it's surprisingly enjoyable once it got going. But even like The Lion King 2 has a cult following.
I like The Lion King 2, actually. That I thought was very well done. Because it had a lot of music that was supposed to be in the original that, obviously, they just couldn't fit. And I actually liked the songs in the sequel.
Yeah.
And so the reason we're talking about this is because the movie we're going to be talking about today, Angels in the Outfield, it was 97 was when Disney started back up The Wonderful World of Disney, which was a big thing back in like
every Sunday night.
50s, 60s, and 70s.
Because there was no other way to see these movies after they left theaters.
Pretty much. It was a way for... Disney to release their animated classics to TV, some of their old live-action movies. They would make some movies strictly for The Wonderful World of Disney back in the day. So when this one got rebranded and Disney started back up, I remember Toy Story was the first one they aired. It was like, I think it was like the network premiere of Toy Story. Then
never heard of it.
Oh, really? It's a good movie. I highly recommend it.
It has its moments.
Yeah, Toy Story 4 is just fantastic.
Oh, I still hate that.
I do it. So... You know, Disney had this another form of making quick, good family movies to distribute to audiences all around the world or country. So, you know, they would make these made-for-TV movies that were good, but you could definitely tell the cheap little cheapness. One of my favorites is the Tower of Terror movie. I watched that every year. I love that movie. That was one of the first Wonderful World of Disney movies. And then the sequel to the movie we're talking about today Angels in the End Zone. And they actually got Christopher Lloyd to come back to play the same character. So I don't have a lot of memory of that movie. You might.
I just remember the opening scene.
Oh, that's it? Okay. Yeah. I honestly don't remember much about it. But
like we said, it was that time where
Disney was just looking for a lot of cash grabs. Because if you know the history of Disney, during the late 90s, they were like struggling as a company in terms of, you know, theme parks were not doing as well as they were in the past. About near the end of the Disney Renaissance is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mulan, Tarzan, and then they get into like the Emperor's New Groove. And
I love the Emperor's New Groove.
Treasure Planet. So the animated films are starting to not succeed well enough at the box office. So they were just looking for any way to make a little extra bucks. And it almost severed their relationship with Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Disney was threatening to make direct-to-video sequels to all the Pixar movies, and Pixar was like, no, these are our movies. You can't do that.
So for those of you guys who don't know, the way that the studios work is when a movie comes out originally, and this is why Wonderful World of Disney was so big, usually a studio or a television channel would go for the rights of it.
Yep.
Right? That's why FX has a lot of movies that just kind of sucked because they jumped on the rights as early as possible.
TNT, I think, has a big thing with Warner Brothers. So like a TNT, you'll get a lot of like the superhero movies nowadays, like Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Man of Steel, Justice League. HBO obviously is part of that as well.
That's how it used to work. And then suddenly when they wanted to do these made-for-TV movies, smaller budgets, but they were still able to do them and they still make a ton of money from them.
Oh, yeah, from network viewing and all the advertisements they were able to get and all that stuff. So yeah, it was a big... I mean, Wonderful World of Disney went for a good 3-4 years where they were every week. It was
watching it. Yeah.
Remember My Date with the President's Daughter?
So, I always thought that was a Disney Channel original movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I always thought it was. It's such a good movie.
And then we forget about the Disney Channel original movies. That's another whole franchise that they had going for a good solid 5 years where like every month was a different movie.
Johnny Tsunami.
Yep. Xenon.
Oh my God, I love the Xenon. Somebody posted on Instagram or something.
Smart House.
Smart House is another good one. Luck of the Irish.
Yeah, they were good quality movies.
They still hold up a lot of them.
Yeah, and those are all on Disney Plus. You can find pretty much all of them on Disney Plus.
I don't think you can find My Date with the President's Daughter on there.
No, none of the Wonderful World of Disney movies you can't find. Like Tower of Terror is not on there.
So weird.
You know, this Angels in the End, not even Angels in the End Zone is on there. So it's a weird. Like I said, I want to research. You know, how they figure that stuff out, how they're able to get these movies onto Disney Plus, what they have to pay for, because Disney owns ABC, so I don't know.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were able to convert all these movies. It might even just be a conversion issue.
Possibly.
Because, like, when DVD and Blu-ray were big, you know, the Disney Silver Vault or whatever they would call it, like, they put out all those movies onto DVD almost immediately. Yes. So, I mean, I'm sure it's not that difficult.
Yeah, like I said, it's really interesting for me to realize exactly what is the reason why you can't find this movie.
Yeah,
you can find it on DVD. I could buy it off Amazon for like $10 on DVD. I just find it interesting that it's not on Blu-ray or it's not on any streaming service.
I'm with you on that one.
So for you, first memories of Angels in the Outfield. Did you see it in theaters?
I don't remember if I saw it in theaters, but obviously one of the scenes that I always think about is you know, the scene of him jumping and catching the ball, like in the air, and he's being carried. The movie is great in concept, and it's great in... This movie's also surprisingly dark at times.
It's a tough subject at some points.
With issues of death and adoption and custody. Yeah. And, like, they literally say in this movie that... Who's the pitcher? Mel.
Mel
he's
Clark.
Going to die of cancer.
Yeah.
Like, they literally say he's smoked for years. He's going to die soon.
Yeah.
But we're going to take good care of... Like, they deal with a lot of stuff. I do like how they kind of stay away from the God aspect of it, because, you know, Sean and I are, I can honestly say I'm not very in touch with my religion.
No.
I know you're not either, but we'll never hate on anybody for what they believe in, anything like that. But this is one of those movies where they don't really ram home any of that stuff. It's just, you know, a kid who, he's an orphan, and just, it's a tough movie, and it deals with some tough issues. This is when Disney wasn't afraid to deal with some of those issues.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it, because I think we talked off microphone about the dad in this movie. We were talking about that before we started recording.
Yes.
Which Sean brought up some good points that I never even thought about, especially because you see this movie very differently as an adult than when you're a kid.
Absolutely. And what many people don't realize is this movie is actually a remake.
Yes.
Of a 1951 film also called Angels in the Outfield. Basically same semi-premise, not exactly. It doesn't deal with kids, but it deals with angels. But in the original, it's the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. But obviously back in 1951, the California Angels, now called the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, 1994, we're going to make an Angels in the Outfield remake. oh my God, there's a baseball team called the Angels?
What are the odds?
Whoa, what are the odds? So it worked out perfectly. And fun fact, 2 years after this movie was made, the Walt Disney Company actually bought the California Angels as a franchise. And they had them under their ownership for, I think, like the next 8-9 years before they sold it off to someone else. So, fun fact.
I love it. I'm all about it.
I know.
Fun fact fanny pack.
Fill up that fanny pack, man. It's... I didn't know, as I was 94, we're 7 years old, yeah. But I do remember actually seeing this movie in theaters. It's one of my earliest memories of seeing a movie in theaters along with Rookie of the Year. So it was like one of those summer release movies, seeing it with my cousins. And I just remember loving it from the first time I saw it. It was always a fun movie. Obviously, Christopher Lloyd, you know, we knew from Back to the Future. So anytime he was in a movie, I loved watching. And as a movie, even on video, I would continue to watch multiple times.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. This was a movie I think I had on tape, like recorded off the TV.
Oh, nice.
I had like the most awesome tape. I think it was like this Rookie of the Year and like something else, like just a solid collection.
Three Ninjas.
Maybe like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or something like that.
Oh, see, there you go.
We got to do that franchise too at some point.
I can't believe we have not done that.
It's one of my favorite movies of
all time. I know, that's why I'm shocked we haven't done it.
I thought about it today when I asked you what movies you wanted to do.
Oh, but, okay. You should have.
Yeah. I thought about it afterwards. But that again, that's another movie that it's a perfect example of this Disney franchising.
Yes, but I will defend the sequel.
Both sequels.
I actually like the third one too.
Yep, and
I have vague memories. The TV show, I don't much. I watched one episode. I just couldn't stick with it.
Yeah, it's a tough premise
because it was syndicated. You didn't know when it was going to be on.
Right,
you know,
right,
all that stuff.
But it's a good example. Again, like the same thing with Aladdin. We like the Aladdin sequels. Yeah. The Little Mermaid didn't like the sequels.
I think I saw it once.
Yeah,
I didn't know if there was multiple. I didn't know that.
I think there's only one. But
there's only one.
I just panicked.
Most of the sequels I was not fans of, like, I think because the Aladdin ones came out first, I was still relatively young enough to watch them.
Also, again, Return of Jafar gets like,
oh, it gets dark.
Genies can't kill. You'd be surprised what you could live through. Jeez, they say that a few times.
Yeah.
Like Iago's all broken at the ends. But yeah, this movie, I do enjoy this movie, and I forgot how much I really enjoy this one. But where are we starting?
Oh, let's start with the. I guess we can start with the plot because it's not rocket science, this plot. It's fairly simple. So young kid Roger and his friend JP are in the foster care system. They live in Anaheim. In a group home led by Maggie, who is like their foster mother. Very nice woman. There's no like evil real like character. There's a bad guy, but he's not like, you know, he's not like an evil guy. He's
the
not,
worst guy in this movie is actually just the sports announcer.
He's just a jerk. He's just like a really just, you don't like him, but he doesn't do anything that's relatively, oh my God, I can't believe you did that.
The closest thing he does is when he sneakily interviews JP.
The little kid. Yeah. It's slimy, but it's not like, oh my God, how dare you? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they didn't have that snidely whiplash bad guy in this movie.
And we'll talk about all that stuff.
But so they're foster kids. They live close to the Angels Stadium. They like to sneak. There's a fun scene at the beginning where they're like in a tree with the mat with the goggles, looking and watching the game. And the Angels are just a horrible baseball team.
All right, who would win in a fight for worst team? The Angels from this or the Cubs before Henry Rowan Gardner? Which team was worse?
Angels. Because I don't think the Cubs were that horrible.
Oh, yeah, I think they still like had a couple of wins.
Decent,
yeah.
They had decent players. I think this is just – this team.
All right,
was
who'd win in a fight though? Mel Clark or Rocket?
Rocket.
I don't know. I think Mel Clark.
Nah, I think Rocket.
I think Mel Clark.
Really?
Yeah. It's Tony Danza.
Gary Busey. Gary Busey's a psycho.
Oh, God, in real life, yeah. Like, if it was a real fight. In a pitcher
match.
But
Tony Danza was a boxer, so you have something there.
But, yeah, so there's a fun opening scene where they get kicked out, and they run back, and they ride their bikes back to the group home where it's Maggie, them, and Miguel.
Miguel.
And Miguel treats them like crap.
Oh, yeah, he's like a little, you know, like the older kid.
He's jaded, very jaded.
Because like, he's been in the system his whole life. You know, Roger and JP are fairly new to the system. JP's like, what, 6-7 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Roger's probably, what, like 11?
Something like that,
And yeah. you meet early on the father. He's there at the house, and you get a sense of him. He's, you know, I don't know if you call him a deadbeat.
Like, he's widowed.
He's widowed.
We never find out.
You don't
really
out what he does for a living.
Or what happened to Roger's mom.
Yeah, you don't find out any of that. You just assume that he wasn't suitable enough to keep Roger.
They never really
on.
Establish whether or not it's he gave up his kid or his kid was taken from him.
Yes, they don't go that far into it.
Because for those of you guys who don't know the American child care system, it's Child Protective Services will get called in if the parent is deemed unworthy to. or unable to provide for their child. So it, they don't make it clear about if he gave up his son, because he does give up his son in this movie.
Yes.
Thinking
but early on, you don't know why he was put into the foster care system.
Exactly. So as you know, as the dad's leaving, Roger,
we get that famous line, when are we going to be a family again?
As a kid, you're with Roger. Like, oh, you know, yeah. It's like when the Angels win the pennant. As an adult, you're like super sarcastic.
Yeah. But, it's like because the father knows, like, we're not going to be a family again, most likely.
Yeah. And he basically takes his motorcycle because he got rid of the pickup and he's traveling away.
Yeah.
He's bye, like, Dad.
So that's the beginning of the movie. And then we get introduced to the manager of the California Angels, and that's George Knox, played by Danny Glover.
So angry in this movie.
Is very angry in this movie. So you really don't dive into the past of him. You get some sense of it that he was a former manager for a Cincinnati Reds team. And it sounds like he had sort of a meltdown there that got him fired. And so this is kind of like a redemption hiring for him here. But the team has just got awful. Mm-hmm. He has a scene with the owner and he's just like, there's a thing called talent and they don't have it,
yeah.
Which you see a lot in the trailer, that scene. So it's like, I can't win with these guys. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you're not here to, like, you're just here to, like,
to write out your contract.
Write out your contract, yada, yada, yada.
Retire.
You know, the owner's not looking for wins. He's very laid back. He's based off the actual former Angels owner, Gene Autry, the singing cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy's even got a cowboy hat. So he's like, he respects.
He reminds me of the guy who creates basketball, the billionaire.
Oh, yes.
Ted Denslow.
Yes.
Yep.
Ted Denslow. Yes, Mr. Denslow.
That was a fun episode. Make sure you guys check that out.
But you get a sense that he respects George Knox. He likes him. He's not looking to, like, fire. He's not like the evil owner where, like, if you don't win the pennant, you're fired.
He's
there's
like
none of that.
The owner from Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. He's like a nice old man who's just, you know, he owns the team and he's not looking for wins. He's just looking for respectability. They don't go into that. No. I'm just giving you my opinion.
So after Roger interacts with his dad, there's a scene of him praying to God.
If there is a God.
Yeah. And again, these are all in the trailers. You can go on IMDb and watch the trailer. This is all in there.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing it like a bunch. Because Disney movies were also famous for putting trailers at the beginning. And you kind of had to watch them.
Sometimes you would remember which movie you were watching just by the trailers.
Oh my God, yeah. So, you know, he prays to God that he'll help the Angels win. And they managed to get, I think they get tickets through some sort of charitable donation or something like that.
It's the foster home. It's like once a year or a couple times during the summer, the foster kids get allowed into like the bleacher seats for free.
We call that a tax write-off, but anyway.
That's true. I'm just
saying. Not me.
So, yeah, because there's a scene at the dinner table where it's like, what's the kid's name? The third
Miguel.
Kid, Miguel. He can't go to the game because he's got a court date.
Yeah.
So
you have a feeling Miguel is actually a juvenile delinquent.
I mean, you could go that way, but again, you know, he's just a little bit older. He's like probably 13, and
JP loves him.
I don't know if JP loves him. JP doesn't know who he loves.
No, remember JP, like when he finds out Miguel left, he's like,
that kid will cry over anything.
He's like,
I really liked Miguel.
Yep.
No, sorry. But I think that kid's very emotional.
Yeah, a little bit.
But so they're at the game, they're sitting in the bleacher seats, and you know, the team is horrible as usual. I think they show a few scenes where they mess everything up. And
Hemeling for Mitchell.
Go back to Cincinnati. So the visiting team is up to bat and the guy hits a ball to like dead center field and the center fielder is running for it. And, you know, Roger notices something's coming down from the sky and it's, you know, very dated CGI.
Oh, it's so Angels. Bad.
And they pick the guy up. And again, as we've said, this scene is, I think, one of the more famous scenes in the trailer.
Matthew McConaughey.
We find out now it's Matthew McConaughey. And they pick him up and he like kind of like glides
and
to catch
the ball. Yeah.
It's a great scene. I love it with the music and, you know, the moment. It's a fun moment.
Yeah.
So we see that scene, you know, oh my God, I can't believe he caught it. And then we are introduced to Christopher Lloyd's character,
because we also
Al.
See that Roger can... Is
Roger
the only
can
one
see.
Sees
he's the only one. He, of course, asks JP. JP's like, I didn't see anything.
It was a good catch.
And then the big guy next to him goes like, sir, did you see that? And he goes, lucky catch.
Yep. And that guy's in the rest of the movie, too. You see him
Yeah, he has a few moments. Yeah. Yeah, he has a few funny moments.
But so Christopher Lloyd comes down, and he refers to himself as Al. Apparently, there is like some sort of mythology there, but whatever.
I just love that he gets it's the American League umpire hat, and that's just call me Al. I mean, it's like stuff like that I love.
Yeah. So he establishes that the Angels are here to help from time to time, and nobody can see or hear them but Roger. And yeah, so we get another scene, I think, is it the the pit, it's, the batter? No,
it's the, yeah, it's the catcher. He goes to the bat, and he hits the walk-off home run. He crushes the ball, and the ball's like...
The bat shatters or whatever. Shatters,
and the ball's dented and flying into the bleachers. And they win. And right after the game ends, they announce that, like, if they announce your seat number, you're going to win a...
Looks like a prison photo.
You're going to win a picture with the manager, Jordan Knox. I remember the woman next to him goes, oh, that's not much of a prize. And JP wins. And
but JP doesn't like strangers.
Doesn't like strangers. So he asks Roger to take the picture. So there's that funny moment, as you just said. It looks like a prison photo.
Two people say it.
Yeah, the photographer and then obviously...
When they bring it,
when they bring it, JP goes, it looks like a prison photo.
Yo, you can tell JP's seen some crap. Well, they mentioned that JP... Later on, they mentioned...
JP slept in a car with his mother.
For years. So he won't... He can't
sit in a
car.
So you can definitely tell JP came from a much tougher situation than Roger did.
Yeah. So... During this time, Roger tells George Knox, he's like, no, the Angels helped. And he's like, a psycho kid.
So,
and it's David is the assistant.
Yes. And he has some, oh my God, there's
poor David.
With him. So Roger and JP go home, and George Knox decides to, he's going to like look into what happened. So he's like,
and he's like talking to them.
To two players, and they're even admitting, they're like, I don't know what happened. Like, I didn't feel, I didn't feel anything. I love the big guy. He goes, it must have been those extra hot chili dogs he ate before the game. You know, that third one kind of tasted a little funny.
Yeah. So when George Knox decides to bring, he decides to bring the picture to him himself.
Yes.
And decides that JP and Roger are his lucky charms. And he'll actually, like, he puts them right in the corner next to the dugout. Like, they get, like, some of the best seats. And David is their new, basically their babysitter. And
so, David, where are the nachos?
I'm all wet.
I'm saving them for later. And then, of course, you get scenes throughout the movie of him just getting like just...
He's got the poncho on at one point.
He's getting squirted with mustard and ketchup or soda, whatever. It's just...
I have soda. Poor David. But But basically what happens is Roger keeps giving him advice about how...
And he signals him when he sees an angel.
With the arms.
With the arms.
Which is hilarious.
The fact that nobody is like...
Taking up on
it. What is this boy doing?
It's still great at the end, though, when he does it.
Oh, yes.
So, Roger tells him to put in the old curmudgeonly pitcher.
Who's been basically riding out his contract because he's got a dead arm. He has no, like, you know, whether it's surgery, whether it's whatever. There is a scene, actually, where Mel Clark, played by Tony Danza, comes up to George Knox before George Knox starts to lighten up. And he goes, hey, coach, you know, when do you think I'm going to be able to pitch? And George Knox basically says, like, you're not going to pitch. As long as I'm the manager here, you're never seeing the mound again.
That's why everybody was shocked.
And, you know, he even brings it up. It's like, hey, I didn't force those pills down your throat in wherever. I don't know if he was from Cincinnati with George Knox or... Like,
I think it's
a deep cut. And, like, Will Clark's about to, like, go after him and he starts coughing. You know, like, he has a coughing attack because you see throughout smoking. The movie that he's a smoker. So, you know, there is no love between the two of them early on in this movie.
Mm-hmm. But we do get the Angels start winning because, you know...
All these things start happening. He puts...
Great montage.
Yep. He puts... And again, another famous actor, not really famous in my opinion, but Academy Award winning actor, Adrian Brody, has his little moment where Roger says, you know, you got to put this guy in. He's the utility infielder. You can't hit. And you get that fun, you know, where he hits the ball in the infield. It never leaves the infield, but the ball's just flying all
and
over the place.
And it's Al actually knocking it around. Yep. Yeah.
So that was a fun scene. The Matthew McConaughey catch, and then obviously when the Angel appears next to Mel Clark, Tony Danza, and he gets a start, and he like throws like a complete game shutout.
Yeah.
So it would be right. It's a fun montage of good scenes where the Angels start winning, start jumping up in the standings, and it's really like, and then you see George starts to become more like happy. Really like wants these kids to be, you know, happy with him. You know,
he gets the bus for them.
The bus because as we just established, JP can't ride in a car.
And of course, one of my favorite scenes is anything you guys want, you name it. And they organize
a neighborhood little baseball game, which is a fun scene.
My favorite character of all time, Marvin.
Marvin, run home, Marvin.
Run home.
Where's he going? You told him to run home, so he did.
I still have a theory that Marvin actually grew up to be Scott Smalls. From the Sandlot.
Not possible, but okay.
I know, but just...
I see where you're going with that,
It's my headcanon.
Okay. I like your thoughts, but, you know...
And then you got, like, the big kid who's like... Babe Ruth! That's Hamilton's son.
That's true.
But that's a great
scene. Everything's going well. Angels are winning. Until... You know, it sounds like they're on a winning streak, and then you find out that Roger has a court date, and so he can't go to the game. So JP goes to the game by himself, and there's this...
He tries to see angels,
and they lose. So JP's, you know, obviously crushed. He's like, oh, it's my fault. I tried to see. And he's so loud. He's like, I tried to see angels. And the announcer guy, who we find out, I guess, is also a former player who was part in injuring George Knox when he was a player. Like, he slid into him, spikes up, and, like, damaged his leg or knee, whatever.
Yeah, J.O. Sanders as Ranch Wilder.
Ranch Wilder. So he is the voice, the radio voice of the California Angels. And just, again, he's just a...
Slimeball,
cocky, you know, all that. So
he manages to get out of JP the fact that Roger can see angels. So they basically... They start to say that they're going to destroy... They try to destroy George Knox's career, and... The owner threatens to relieve George of his management.
Because he thinks he's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like, are you having a mental break?
So Roger actually tells Maggie about it.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I can do this. And Maggie's a very, you see that she's a very religious person. And she actually, they held a press conference where George was basically going to like be like, I'm done. But Maggie gets up and speaks on behalf of the boys, which is a great scene. And then, you know, all the players get up and they're like, hey, we won't play for anybody but George Knox. And it's a great scene. It really is.
Because you could see how in just a couple of months, these players have grown to respect him. And because, I mean, you know, before in the movie, he wanted nothing to do with these players. They were all horrible. So
you got your head so far up each other's butt, you can't see the light of living day.
But before this scene, because obviously the reason why Roger's not at that game that they lose is he's at the court date. And it's established that the father is giving up custody. He's like the boy will be better off without me.
As a kid, you hate the dad. It's
like, how could you do that? But as an adult, you're looking back on it and you're like, yes, does it suck? Absolutely.
But he's doing what he thinks is best.
Honest to himself. He's like, I can't care for him. Like, I can't give him a good home. Now, could you say he thinks he can't give him a good home because he doesn't want to give him a good home? You could go down that road, but they don't go into it deep enough. But looking at it black and white, you can honestly say he wants Roger to be adopted by a loving family that can care for him, that can give him a good home, that, you know, obviously he can't. So looking at it as an adult now, you kind of understand why the father did what he did. But I agree, as a kid, you're just like, wow, what a dick.
Rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Roger's very cynical now. Like, he's like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to believe in angels anymore. There is no God, you know. So
during the barbecue
during
scene.
During the barbecue scene. So George Knox is trying to, like, convey to him, like, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't the end. Like, you know,
and this is where we really start to see their bond.
The bond really grow. Yes.
And so the final game rolls around and they're playing the Chicago White Sox.
Yep.
And none of the angels show up. And at first, Roger thinks it's because he said he didn't believe in God anymore.
Yeah.
But Al shows up and he's like, no. Championship games are to be played on their own. And now the kids are also in full uniform in the dugout.
In the dugout. And they're playing. The team's playing well. It's like a scoreless tie. The game is going, you know, great.
But this
it's
is
like,
also where we get the scene where he says that Mel's going to die.
So this is the scene. So it's like, so what are you doing here? And he goes, oh, I'm here to check on Mel. He's coming up soon. He's going to be one of us. And I mean, I remember the first time I, like, kind of understood what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that guy's going to die? Like, he's, like, young. How is that possible? Like, because this is when you're young and you still think that you can only die when you're, like, really old.
Yeah.
So, like, it's... And the scene is so well done because Christopher Lloyd is... Let's establish this. Is a fantastic actor.
Oh, yeah. He
could be physical comedian in one shot and then just go pure drama and pure dramatic acting in the next. And the way he delivers that... Because he's trying to comfort Roger and explain to him, it's like, listen, he will be fine.
Yeah, it's a part of life.
It's a part of life. But what I love about it, that scene is they cut to Tony Danza. I mean, he has no clue what's going on.
Right.
And Al's even saying, like, he doesn't even realize it yet. Like, he doesn't even know what's happening yet. And it's just, you could see him, he's like, you know, he's just contemplating the game, but you're just like, wow, this guy's going to be dead in, like, less than a year.
It's crazy to think about.
And, you know, Roger's like on the verge of tears and he's like, no, like that's not, no. And it's a heart-wrenching scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, as a kid, you're like, again, you may not understand what
Disney
it means,
had balls.
But as an adult, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
They did that. Okay.
So
it makes the ending even more sweeter.
Yeah. So Mel, he does well throughout most of the game and he makes it to the ninth inning, which
and he's definitely losing steam.
And you know, obviously the running joke in Cinematic Adventures and my entire life is that I'm not a big sports guy.
Sports.
But even go sports. I'm gonna make that shirt one day. Go sports. This is my sports shirt. But I hope both teams are having a good time. That's what I should say. But obviously, to have a pitcher go an entire game...
Doesn't happen nowadays.
Not nowadays. Especially a championship game like this.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, it's funny, because as a kid, I thought baseball was a lot like other sports, where it was just one game to determine the winner. But this is, you know, obviously now I know it's an adult series games, you know, because it's not like the Super... I always just thought everything was like the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Especially movies like this, where it was the one big game.
Well, this actually, in terms of what was happening in the standings, this was a one big game, because I think it was like for the pennant.
Yeah.
So it was like whoever won this game went to the World Series.
Right. Which still bothers me about Rookie of the Year, where they lost their two best pitchers in the playoffs.
But, you know, sometimes it happens. Yeah, and
still managed to win the
World Series. It happens, man. It happens.
It could happen.
It can happen.
Yeah. So Mel gets, he's like, literally, he's got three strikes left, like one out.
He is shot. Like, you could tell he's like, he's tired.
He's the sweat.
Barely can find the strike zone. But, you know, and then obviously, Jordan is a scene where George Knox, he goes out to the mound and he goes, you know, and Mel Clark is like, you know, I'm done. You know, are there any Angels? You know, I don't think I got any left. And he's like, yeah, you got Angels. And you turn back to Roger. He gets up and he starts doing the arm swing.
And the entire stadium does it.
The team comes up. The entire stadium does it. Everyone's doing it. And he goes, "You got Angels, man. You got this."
Yeah.
And he leaves him in to face like the slugger of the team of the White Sox.
And doesn't he catch it?
Yeah,
he doesn't.
It's like a line drive, and
he dives and catches it.
He dives and catches it, and then it has that little moment where the ball kind of comes out of the glove and bounces back in. I love it.
It's fantastic. And so they win the game, they clinch the division and the title and the pennant. And
but I do love where he goes like, "There are Angels," and he goes, "No, not this time, Mel, you did it yourself." And he's like, "Oh my," and he's like freaking out. He's like, "Oh, that's awesome."
And Ranch gets fired.
Yes, Ranch does get fired.
And his like junior assistant, "Less is more," click, and the Angels have won. Because he kept doing that
to him. Sweet moment. Sweet moment for him.
So the movie ends with Knox shows up at the foster home, mm-hmm. and he ends up adopting Roger first, and JP runs away.
Well, yeah, it's a great scene because Maggie's just like, "Roger, you know, somebody put in a request to adopt you," and you know, JP's like, "Oh no, you know, freaking!" You know, he's like, "I don't want Roger to leave,"
rightfully so.
They're like best friends, and JP's like known him his whole time he's been there, and so JP runs away. Maggie runs after him, and George Knox is like, "You know, hey Roger, that was me. I want you to, you know, come and live in my place." And he goes, "I can't leave JP." He goes,
"I can never leave JP.
He's coming too.
I heard that." And I like how they do ask about Maggie, or JP does. And she's like, "You know, this is my place. This is what I do.
More little angels are coming, you know, to live here." And then, you know, they're having their fun little family moment. And then all of a sudden, JP looks and he sees
Al outside.
He's like, "I knew it could happen."
I love it.
And then Al flies away, and it's the first time you see Al in like angel form.
Yeah,
like, you know, he's got the halo, and
we're
you know,
always watching.
And then he runs to the sky, and they do like the baseball thing with the stars.
Mm-hmm.
It is really, I mean, very underrated movie.
And let's just run through this cast super quick. Like these are just the big names. We'll do.
You got Danny Glover,
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tony Danza, Christopher Lloyd,
Brenda Fricker,
Matthew McConaughey, Adrian Brody, Neil McDonough. Like, so we got some
surprising. J.L. Sanders, we said, was the broadcaster.
Really
Ranch Wilder.
Big names in this, surprisingly.
Yeah. I mean, again, I remember Matthew McConaughey got big fairly quickly, not too long after this movie. Like, he did A Time to Kill, which was like his big, breaking.
When did Dazed and Confused come out?
Dazed and Confused might have been around the same time, but that wasn't, I don't know if he was like big and like wasn't the star of it, but like,
I think nowadays he's considered the star of it.
Oh yeah.
Everybody thinks of him.
But like Adrian Brody really didn't get big until like he won the Oscar. He kind of came out of nowhere and then you just kind of noticed that he was in all these movies, you know, beforehand. And then obviously Neil McDonough.
Very big C-list actor.
C-list, TV.
Always working.
Yes. I remember Minority Report. He was one of the cops at Minority Report. I'm like, this guy looks familiar.
Minority Report.
And then I looked up online and said, oh my God, that's Whit Bass.
And obviously, we love him as Damian Dark.
Damian Dark on Arrow, yes.
He was one of the biggest recurring villains on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really
liked Legends.
Him. And Legends. It turned into a semi-goodish guy.
But really? I don't even remember.
A little bit. Not like good guy, but still. Yeah. And I always love the scene of him. It's about a Spanish guy. Jose. I can't believe it. It's too easy. I love it. But what would you give a Star City rating for this movie?
I give this a 3.5.
I think I'm with you on that. I think nostalgia berries really make this go down a little bit sweeter. But
it was one of those, again, it's the early time in our lives when we saw this movie for the first time. It's one of those that resonates with us. You know,
oh, absolutely.
A good family movie. Back when Disney was just, you know, kind of dishing out all these like kind of sports you know, movies, this,
oh, yeah,
Big this Green. Good. They had a little streak of this going where it was just these fun little family films that they would spew out live action along with their animated movies.
I love it. So, I'm all about it.
No, it was. I always had a good, you know, soft place for this movie. It was always, you know.
A good soft
good
place.
Good soft
for this
place.
Movie?
I don't know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying what I mean. Either. I don't want to know what you mean.
Oh, stop.
Keep your soft place away from me.
You're always in my soft place.
Ew. But anyway, we do have a Fan Feedback Friday.
Oh, my God.
If you could have any movie theme as your personal theme song, what would it be? Got some good ones. Producer Melanie wrote Circle of Life or Gangster's Paradise. Just kidding.
That
is too good. She said probably Footloose, Flame, Flashdance. I've had the time of my life. Oh, yeah. Her with her dancing movies. Our friend Mike wrote probably the Jaws theme. Everyone would always get out of the way, and I'd never have to deal with traffic. Well done. Matt Hanley said Star Wars. You said James Bond. Our friend Martin said Indiana Jones. And our friend Joe said Charade. That's a good one. I don't even know what mine would be, in all honesty. I feel like I would be like Star-Lord and it'd be Come and Get Your Love. It's like something silly like that. Actually, it would probably be Carry On Wayward Son. That's from Supernatural.
Say, like, come on, who are we talking about?
That's not here? A movie theme. Not a movie theme. But yeah, today was a lot of fun.
It was.
Did you enjoy it?
On a level of 1 to 5, probably like 4.
Would you recommend people look at some of our other material?
I would always recommend someone looking at our other material, well, whether it's Multiverse or MF Uncensored.
Well, perfect, because if you go to MisfitFaction.com, TheMisfitFaction.com, you'll find links to not only our shows, but some of our other shows, but also some of our reviews, our articles, our affiliates, our Misfit Faction store, where you can buy some Misfit swag, all sorts of cool stuff. Also, if you type in Misfit Faction on social media, like Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or even TikTok, you'll find more of our materials. Make sure you guys do that. Every like, comment, subscribe, share, download makes a big difference. So make sure you guys, if you like the show, check it out. And also on Facebook, we have our group, the Misfit Faction Media Network group. If you guys request access to it, you guys will get first dibs into it.
Wow, look at that.
I gotta lay down.
Yeah. So are we doing another episode after this?
Heck yeah, we are.
Well, Paul, this has been fun. And as always, I'm one of your hosts, Sean.
And I'm Paul.
And everybody have a good summer.
Or don't. We're not your boss.
That's true.
Bye.
We hate you all.